the localized aspect of God. In the Christian tradition, there is a similar conception, which is the Holy Spirit, or the Holy Ghost. The Holy Spirit is expanded everywhere and as a person. There's one Christian preacher who I sometimes listen to. I like his sermons. They're very interesting. His name is Charles Stanley. And he very much promotes this ideal of the Holy Spirit being with us now. The Holy Spirit is within our heart, within your heart, and within everyone's heart. And he is interacting in a very individual way with you differently than with the next person. This is the conception of Paramatma, that Paramatma is the individual localized aspect of God within. So in the Vedic conception of reality, there is the individual soul, that is you and I, the jiva, tiny spirit soul, infinitesimal, not all-powerful, but one of the multifarious energies of God. That infinitesimal energy and individual energy, it is called jivatma. The jivatma is eternal. Najayate namriyate va kadachin. Mamai vangso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. In the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna explains that all of the jiva souls, jiva bhuta, the jiva souls, they are mine. They're part of God. And they are also sanatana. They are without beginning and without end. And the jiva souls have that identity. And that is actually our identity. We are not of this material world. These temporary forms that we have are external, just like the clothes we wear are external. And the jiva souls are eternal. You experience this to some small extent because from moment to moment, from day to day, from week to week, from year to year, you experience that your identity has not changed, even though your form has changed. You may have lost some hair. You may have a different hair color. It may go gray. You may have been a little child. You may become adolescent and then old person, as will take place the passage of time. But diras tattarana muyati. It says in the Bhagavad Gita, one who is sober, who is not intoxicated by the material energy, not trying to lord over the material energy, who has developed the mood of service to God, they can easily see this and perceive it. It's not a mystical aspect or reality. It is real reality. And really, what we call material life is like a dreamlike state. And our Gurudev Srila Prabhupada used to sometimes describe it as phantasmagoria, just like in a dream. We are walking about misidentifying with these temporary external forms that we have. And then beyond the Paramatma aspect, which is the individual aspect of God, but full Godhead, seated within our heart, sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto, he is within our hearts. He is witnessing and sanctioning. So two souls within this body. Actually, there are many souls within this body. If you take bacteria, parasites, things like that. Many souls, but they are identifying that I am this bacteria, or I am this virus, or I am paramecium, or what have you. But the illusion, the false ego of this jiva soul, me, I think I am this body. I am American, or I am man, or I am woman, or I am old, or young, or what have you. And each of us has this false conception of self based on our illusory aptitude, you might say, our karma. And as we have associated with the material energy since time immemorial, we have developed different kinds of mentalities, which at the time of death takes us yet to another spiritual, another material body in the next life. And the Paramatma is witnessing and sanctioning. And the relationship like this is described in the Upanishads, that like two birds in a tree. The tree is like the body, and there are some fruits on the tree. And the jiva soul, the tiny soul, the conditioned soul, who is prone to forget its identity, and prone to lord over the material energy, although we are not the lords of the material energy, they are tasting the fruit. And the Paramatma is witnessing and sanctioning. And that's described another way. Nityo nityanam chetana chetananam eko bahunam jo vidadadkam. Our desires, they are being witnessed by God, and he is arranging some environment for us to reap the fruit of that desire. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. Nothing taking place without God's arrangement. So, at least in India, there is a very determined culture to understand that you cannot achieve anything in this world without higher authority. Even the demigods, which are lower beings within the material world, empowered by God, perform some function, as we will see here in this Govardhan Puja, as we describe it. They also are under Krishna's control. And the people in India, not everyone is spiritually evolved to the point where they're worshiping God himself. They may be be worshiping some aspect of God. Just like someone in the government, they may need some. So they'll go to the Minister of Education, Saraswati. I need some intelligence. I need some education. Or they may want a nice husband or wife. Or they may want wealth. You'll see in the stores everywhere in Ganapati. And like this, the conception is that you cannot get anything without going to a higher authority. This is the Vedic culture. Ultimately, after many lifetimes, or with good fortune and good association, you'll come to the realization that everything is coming from the Supreme Godhead himself, and that you don't need to go to any subordinate minister. And the higher Godhead, that is Bhagawan. Bhagawan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has his place in the spiritual world, in Goloka Vrindavan, and who sometimes will enter into the material world either directly, as he did Krishna's Leela some 5,000 years ago, or he may send a plenary portion, or he may empower someone to perform some particular function on his behalf. And these are called avatars. Avatars mean they have descended. And the reason for the avatar is described by Krishna himself as well in the Bhagavad Gita. That yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata yutanam tadharmasya tadatmanam srijam yaham. He says, I come down to this material plane when there is too much forgetfulness of dharma, which are the spiritual or religious principles. And paritra naya sarunam vina chaya chadushkritam dharma sangsta panartaya sambhavami juge juge. Age after age, he will come back again and again to remind the forgetful soul, and specifically paritra naya sarunam, those who are sadhus, who are who have some sukriti, some piety, he comes to save them. And vina chaya chadushkritam, and also he comes to vanquish miscreants or demoniac forces. So God is not always all good as we would expect it by our material perception. He has a dual function when he comes to this world: to save the fallen souls who are pious, and to also vanquish the miscreants who are impious. And then we see that in Krishna's Leela. So this Govardhan Puja, when Krishna appeared, of course he appeared originally in his four-handed form before Devaki and Vasudev, and then he assumed his original form of Krishna for their pleasure, and then he was taken to Vrindavan to enjoy his childhood pastime. And while there, so many wonderful, incredible things took place, and they're recorded in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And one such Leela was Govardhan Puja. So Krishna appeared in the family of Vaishyas, which are cowherdsmen. He was in the family of Nanda Yashoda, and was playfully enjoying his pastime with his eternal associates, cowherd boys, gopis, those who have relationship with him, like Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. And this is called rasa, for those who are not familiar with this conception. In the spiritual world, sometimes people, they wonder, they speculate, what is God doing in the spiritual world? They have this idea that he's sitting on some kind of throne, and he's, you know, like some type of, king in Saudi Arabia or something. Oh yes, come before me. Oh yes, thank you very much for your offering, and I give you my blessing, and now you go off and try to exploit nature or something. It's not like that. God is very playful. God loves to enjoy intimate pastimes or leela with his eternal associates. Because we are part and parcel of Krishna, mamaya vangso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanat, we also have qualities to a smaller extent, infinitesimal extent, like Krishna. We have the quality of eternality. We have the quality of consciousness, chit and ananda. We have quality of blissfulness, just like God. And our senses in the spiritual world are non-different from the self. Here we have duality because we have a material body which we are not. And so there is some duality between the senses of touch and smell and taste and the self. And therefore we can experience pain or pleasure as the case may be. But the senses in the spiritual world are non-different from your very self. Rishikesha Rishikena Sevanam Bhakti Ruchite. Your senses are identical with yourself, and your senses also are expansions of the senses of Sri Krishna. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, the supreme pleasure, and he has expanded himself, expand his pleasure, and you are part of that leela or activity. So that when your activities in the spiritual world are taking place, playing with Krishna, dancing with Krishna, even fighting with Krishna, if you like, all of that is completely transcendentally ecstatic. So much so that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj says that when the jiva soul, the tiny jiva soul, you and I, see Krishna, then our experience of pleasure is 10,000 times greater than the pleasure that Krishna has when seeing us. So imagine how great is that pleasure that Krishna is funneling through you, and it is coming back to him in the form of love and ecstasy. And this is what is called rasa. Rasa means the exchange of transcendental love and service in a particular mellow. So these rasas, they've been described by Rupa Goswami as taking on different characteristics. Sometimes maybe shantaras. Shantaras means having a relationship with God which is neutral. You know, just like if you say, God is great, that's neutrality. There's no real service involved in that, to say that God is great. And then you can have a relationship with God as his servant, dasya ras. So shantaras, neutrality. Dasya ras is servitude. And that servitude can take on very intimate forms, or it can be very formal, as the case may be. Like Hanuman, his relationship is very formal, but there may be very intimate servitors as well. And friendship also, which is called shakya ras. Arjuna is a friend of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, and he is a more formal friend. But Krishna also has more intimate friends, like Sudama or Uddhava, and they have more intimate relationship with Krishna. And then you can have relationship with God as you go to the higher planets of Goloka Vrindavan. Then there is relationship of parenthood, Vatsalya Ras. Even though God is the parent of everybody, the origin of everybody, Ahang Pita Pradapi Prajapita, he says in Bhagavad Gita, I am the seed-giving father of all living entities. Still, there are those souls who they want to take care of Krishna like you would take care of a child. They want to dote over Krishna. They fear for Krishna being hurt, even though Krishna cannot be hurt by anything. But this mentality is there, and that is Vatsalya Ras. Just like Devaki and Vasudev or Nanda Jashoda, like this. And so many souls have that relation. And then there is conjugal love, and that is Madhurya Leela. And that can take on a very formal aspect, such as in the Vaikuntha world, where the Lakshmis are feeling themselves to be the wife of Lord Vishnu, the goddess of fortune. And then that is a very formal aspect. Or it can take on a more lawless aspect, as the gopis in Vrindavan. And the gopis, many of them may be married, but they're simply thinking of Krishna. And if Krishna will call them with his flute, immediately they will go to him, no matter what condition they may be in. They may be cooking, they may have a child in their hand, they may be dressed or partially dressed or undressed. They go to Krishna because of their parakiya rasa, this mentality of very intimate relationship that Krishna is my lover. You see, that is considered to be the highest rasa, according to Rupa Goswami, this lawless rasa of conjugal love with Krishna. You see, so in this case, Krishna, while he was still appearing as a child in Vrindavan, he was about 5 years old. And again, they come from a cow protection herd, cowherdsman family. Nanda Maharaj, one of the chief cowherders of Vrindavan. And because they're part of the Vedic culture, so they wanted to offer something to Lord Indra, who is the demigod empowered to take charge of rain. So they were preparing some sacrifice with a typical Vedic prescription to offer something to Lord Indra. Krishna was only a small child at that time. But because he is Krishna, everyone is completely charmed and enthralled with him, as you will see. Krishna said to them, my dear father and cowherdsmen, why are you wasting time offering to Lord Indra? Rather, you should immediately offer to Govardhan Hill, because Govardhan Hill is providing nice grasses for the cows and fresh water for the cows. Why are you wasting time offering to Lord Indra? He said, oh no, we have to offer to Lord Indra. After all, he's in charge of the rain. Without rain, we have no grasses, we have no this, we have... But being charmed by Krishna, Krishna convinced him. Firstly, he said, he used the atheistic philosophy of Karma Mimamsa. Karma Mimamsa means, if you work, you will get the result of your work. You know, everyone thinks, if I work hard, I'll make money, I'll gain, you know, what I want in life. This is a Karma Mimamsa philosophy. As you have karma or work, so you'll get the result of that. Krishna says to him, you have no need to think about Indra. After all, if you do your prescribed duties, your work, you'll get the result. And then Krishna finally said to them, no, you have no time to waste. You must offer immediately to Govardhan Hill. Make a very nice offering to this hill, which is about 14 miles long in Vrindavan, and cook nice, delectable things like curd and yogurt and sweet rice and so many vegetable preparations, and make offering. And also, you must feed the Brahmins, the priestly class. You must feed all of the cows. You must feed even the dogs and the dog eaters. Everyone should be fed at this time, like this. Anyway, so Krishna, even though he's acting as a small child, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and their worshipable, loving source of everything for them, they said, okay. So immediately they took up the task of making this wonderful offering and laying it before Govardhan. And then Krishna appeared as Govardhan Hill himself with a huge form. And he accepted and ate all the offering. And then after seeing this wonderful form, they distributed the prasadam or the remnants to all of the, as Krishna had mentioned, to all of the inhabitants, even the cows, the dogs, the other animals, the dog eaters,
the Brahmins, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then they went home. So with this in mind, they all went home. And then Indra, even though Indra is a demigod, and by nature demigods are, you know, devoted to God, they know where from where their power comes. He was illusioned and became proud and puffed up. And so he was very mad that this upstart Krishna had done this and taken away his offering. As a result of this, he immediately called upon the Sayamvantaka clouds, these powerful clouds that pour and inundate rain and ice and cause wind and everything to come to Vrindavan. And they were a little afraid to do this because the Sayamvantaka clouds had more sense than Indra at this point. But they did it, and Indra came on his vahana, his carrier, which was an elephant, and they rained so much water for 7 days. All of Vrindavan started to flood, even though Krishna was simply appearing at that time. Krishna never ages more than about what we would call a youth, about 16 years old. He's Navayovana. He never ages, but he can sometimes appear in a youthful childhood form for Leela, and sometimes in a form like a young teenager, although he's not a teenager, he's eternal. In any case, all of the cowherdsmen and cows, all of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, even though he is appearing as a small child, they know that he is their only protector. And so they all went to Krishna, and they said, "Oh, Krishna, please protect us. The rain is coming down, everything is being flooded." And so Krishna, with his small left finger, he raised up this 14-mile-long hill with his small left finger, and he said, "All of you now come underneath this umbrella of Govardhan Hill." And they all did. And for 7 days, they stood there amazed, watching Krishna holding up the hill. They had neither desire for sleep, neither desire for food or water. And there's this one picture that one of the devotees, because some of the cowherdsmen thought, "Oh, Krishna cannot do this." They were using their canes trying to help him hold up the hill like this. Very charming Leela. And in this way, Krishna performed the Govardhan pastime of Giridvaradhari, holding up the hill. In the some of the lectures of Srila Prabhupada, during Krishna Leela, he described that Lord Brahma, he came and formed the hill of Varshana, where Radharani came from. And Lord Shiva, he came and formed the hill of Nandagan, which is Nanda Maharaj's hometown. And Lord Vishnu, he became Govardhan Hill. So anyway, after the seeing this, Lord Indra, he came to his senses, and he realized that he was mistaken, and he had become falsely proud, and the rain stopped, the clouds went away, and Krishna replaced the hill exactly where it was, and he told all the cowherdsmen and cows, "You go home now, you're safe." And in this way, we have several things to learn from this Leela. One thing to learn is, first of all, how charming is Krishna? How playful is God? God is not sitting on a throne taking offerings and things like this. That's not his business, really. God is interacting with the devotees, exchanging love, and protecting them as well. One of the signs of surrender to God is knowing that Krishna will protect me, God will protect me. And this feeling of dependence on God, it is a sign of surrender to God. To feel oneself that I can protect myself, that is a false proposition. It's an illusory proposition, because we cannot protect ourselves from anything. The thoughts which enter our mind and which leave our mind, we have no control over. The progression of aging and disease and death, we have no control over. But to think falsely that I am independent and that I can protect myself, this is an illusion. So it is a source of enlightenment, not weakness, to realize that Krishna, God, will protect me. You see. Second thing to learn from this Leela is that one should not bother serving or worshiping the demigods. It's not that they are not empowered beings. We honor everyone. What to speak of demigods? We honor each of you. And anyone we meet, we honor. Because Krishna is there within their heart. The jiva soul is there within the heart. But Krishna says, frankly, in the Bhagavad Gita, he says that those who are alpamedasa, those who are less intelligent, they worship the demigods. Not knowing that all things which are received as benedictions from the demigods are actually coming from me. So there's no need to worship demigods. There's no need to serve anything else other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. In this way, several different things we can take home from the lesson of Govardhan Puja. Also, to be generous. How Krishna wanted everyone to be fed from the offerings that were made to Govardhan. Today in Vrindavan, at this time, you'll see people from all around the villages. They go to Vrindavan and they're dressed in their village dresses, sometimes very, very colorful. Sometimes they'll
they'll take their cows with them, and they'll go around Govardhan Hill, circumambulate Govardhan Hill. Just like you devotees, you'll dance around this makeshift Govardhan Hill as a symbol of that circumambulation, going around the deity of Govardhan, you could say. Because Lord Vishnu himself appeared as Govardhan. And when Krishna holding up Govardhan, you can say that God is lifting God himself in that way. So this is nature of Govardhan Leela. What time we go till with this? 5:30. So first of all, let's open it up for some discussion. It's now 5 to 5. We have time. I can talk forever, but let's hear what you have to say. Yes, sir. No, it's actually true. I mean, there are many stories about the deities even moving. I myself had one dream I'll share with you. Very long time ago. This was like 1974. At that time, I was living as a sannyasi, actually. And in the Los Angeles temple, I always, you know, when I first came to Krishna consciousness, you know, I was a seeker back in 1970, and you know, I loved the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, and I had one class in Hinduism at the University of Florida, where I was an undergraduate. And I remember I had one Western professor. He had a long beard, and he was a nice guy. He was a young guy, and he showed one film of deity worship. And so at Gainesville, Florida, we had no temple, no deity like that, like this we have here, the deity before us, the form of God in the form of Radha Madan Mohan. And so I saw this film, and so I went back to Gargamuni Swami, who had introduced me to Krishna consciousness. I said, "You guys don't do that, do you?" He said, "Yes." And I thought, oh, so that was very different for me, because I was raised in a Jewish tradition, you know, that, you know, thou should not worship any graven form, so to speak, you know. That was a little different for me. And in fact, when I first joined, and I went up to New York on the way to Pakistan, and I got to the New York Temple in Brooklyn, which was my first real temple to see, because I joined underneath a tree. They had a big temple there with Jagannath deities, and I went to my first Mangalartik, you know, and devotees, there are hundreds of devotees, they're chanting and dancing and jumping up and down and all this stuff. And I thought, oh, what did I get myself into? But I had this dream, and this dream was, there's one deity in Los Angeles named Kartamshai. Kartamshai is like elephant herdsman, and he was one deity that sat in one part of the Los Angeles temple. And so I was sleeping and having this dream, and all of a sudden I'm seeing Kartamshai, and his big toe is moving around like this, making circles. The deity's toe. And I'm kind of awake, you know. I'm thinking, this is very strange. Deity cannot move his toe, you know. But he's moving his toe. He's making big circles with his blue toe. And I go in to check it out. I go in a little closer, and he kicked me in the forehead like this with his toe. And I swear to you, immediately Brahman realization. I mean, spiritual realization. Just like, but laughing realization. I thought, oh, what a sense of humor Krishna has. And we have heard stories also of how the deity sometimes will walk off the altar for devotees who have certain things. But the point is this, is that the form of God, the name of God, the leela of God, and the qualities of God are all transcendental, spiritual. The deity worship in the temples is very authorized in the Vedas. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he authorized it, obviously. He spent so much time in Jagannath Puri, worshipping Lord Jagannath, that the service to the deity, it is service to Krishna. We have heard this example, but it's not a very good example. That, like, if you want to mail a letter, you can directly hand it to the person, or you can put it into the post office, or you can mail it in a box somewhere. But we don't say that the deity is like some kind of representative. The Archa Vigraha, the form of God, we consider to be non-different from his spiritual form. It is a form of God himself. And therefore, we worship the deity form, not so much that we think that we are seeing God, but we are thinking that God is seeing us, and he is examining us, and in that way, he is purifying us. The Nama Rupa Guna Lila, the name of God, the spiritual names of God, and there are many, even in different traditions, the form of God, the Lila, as we're reading here today, studying a little bit about Govardhan Puja, and the qualities of God, his nature. These are all non-different from the personality of Godhead himself. Anyone else have any comments, any thoughts? Govardhan Puja? You're all devotees, I know.
How could Indra, I mean, he's very...
So, great personality, you know, far above us in intellect. He can control all the rain and the king of all the demigods and things. How can he be so illusioned as to try to attack
Krishna? Not only Indra, even Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma, who the first created being within this universe, who came from Lord Vishnu directly. He, watching the Leela of Krishna, he stole the cows and the cowherd boys at one point for 1 year. And Krishna personally expanded himself as those cows and cowherd boys, so that the mothers of the cows and the mothers of the children would not be upset that they were missing. And it's described that during that year, the cows were especially very, very loving to their calves, and the mothers very loving to their children, because it was Krishna himself hiding in that, disguised in that form. So even the great demigods within this world, they also can be sometimes puffed up or proud. You know, Srila Prabhupada used to always say, don't be puffed up. And that instruction also, we can see, goes from higher to lower, that even demigods can sometimes be puffed up. We see sometimes in the administration of some governments that some of the ministers might be puffed up. A coup d'etat may take place in some form or another. So this kind of false pride is rampant, and it is characteristic of material consciousness. It can happen. But then, because they are by nature pious servants of God, then they're rectified again, like that. Not to be falsely proud. So the example here, very, very important to take home, is that even though, look, Nanda Maharaj, he was the chief of the cowherdsmen, and rain's coming like crazy and flooding all of Vrindavan. Why didn't they all go to Nanda Maharaj for protection? Nobody going to Nanda Maharaj for protection. Everyone went to Krishna. So this transcendental reality is that even though they're interacting with Krishna, I may be Krishna's father, or I may be Krishna's friend, or I may be Krishna's girlfriend, cowherd's girl, or Krishna's cow, what have you. They all know Krishna is their only protector. You see? This mentality is deeply rooted in reality. In the spiritual world, no one protecting except for God, Krishna, like that. And this cultivation of feeling oneself to be protected by the Supreme Lord, that is a very, very good thing. That Krishna will take care of me. Krishna is my guardian. Krishna will protect me. This is cultivation of the Sharanagati, the feeling of surrender to God. Part of your training, part of your cultivation. And why did they listen to Krishna? He's a little child, acting like a little child. Why the cowherdsmen, they were going to make some offering to Lord Indra? Why did they listen to little nonsense Krishna? Because he is so charmed. They're completely in love with Krishna. Whatever Krishna will say, they'll do. This is their mentality, you see. This is the lila, the activity. The
distinction of Krishna and the God of the Israelites and the God of Christ, God of
right.
Christians and...
very good question.
And the God of Islam.
Very good question. In Hebrew, Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. God is one. And in Islam, I think they say, there is no God but God, like this. There is only one God. Sometimes people mistakenly, because of the way Hinduism has been taught, not the Vedic religion, but Hinduism, they think that there are many gods. And some of the teachers who have poor fund of knowledge have basically said that, oh, you can worship any god, in the end, behind that god, there is Brahman. We call that impersonalism, Mayavad, impersonalism, because they feel that behind everything, there is an impersonal or formless reality. But this is not the teaching either of the Bible. I don't know so much about Islam, but it is not the teaching of the Vedas either. In the Old Testament, in Genesis, it is said that man is created in God's image. In other words, God has a human-like but not material form. Two hands, two legs, eyes, ears, like this. All spiritual. And in the Vedic conception, the creator, Janmadyas Yataha Anwayadi Taratascha, from whom everything has come, the creator of everything, that is a person, a spiritual person, not like you and I, not with limitations. So there is only one God. What you'll find in different religious conceptions is a certain understanding of the truth. And we sometimes compare it to like an elephant. If someone were blind and they wanted to feel what is an elephant, if they felt the tail, they would say, ah, this is the elephant. If they felt the tusk, ah, this is the elephant. If they felt the trunk, this is the elephant. Or the legs, this is the elephant. But to understand the full elephant, that is Vedanti Tatvam Vidas Tatvam Yajgyanam Advayam, to know God as he is, according to the Vedas, according to the Bhagavad Purana, you must understand that God is Advayam, which means he is non-dual. There's not two gods. You see? Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Only one reality exists. That's God. Vasudeva, name of Krishna, Sarvamiti, is everything. Nothing is existing outside of God. But there is the energetic and his energies, which are numerous. He has energies that make up this material world, which he describes in the Bhagavad Gita as being apara prakriti, or inferior energies that are made up like of the different elements of earth and air and water, fire, ether or sky, mind, which is subtle, intellect, which is subtle, and ahankar, false ego, which are material energies. And then he says, apareyam itastvanyam prakritim vidime param. And besides this inferior energy, there is a higher energy of which the jiva souls, you and I, apareyam, besides this, prakritim vidime param. Prakriti vidime param. Param prakriti means the spiritual energy. We jiva souls are part of that spiritual energy. So he is the source of both the material energy and the spiritual energy, both. He is the energetic source of everything. That's God. He describes in the Bhagavad Gita the understanding that everything is threaded upon him like pearls on a string. Nothing is existing independently of him. And then he says to Arjuna, he says, behold my mystic opulence, Arjuna. He says, everything is existing within me, and I am within everything, but yet still I am different from everything. And then again, everything is outside of me. In other words, God exists independently of everything. This is God. God is not dependent upon anything. And so the definition of God, according to the Bhagavad Purana, janmadyas yataha, from whom everything has come, anvayadi taratascha, directly and indirectly, abhignya swarat. Abhignya means he knows everything. Everything.
But if we worship Allah, or if we worship Christ, or the God of Israel,
yeah.
are these demigods, or are these in fact the one?
Well, Christ never said he was God, though. Christ said that he was the Son of God. Right. So he is alluding to the fact that there is a higher being than him.
Well, I meant Christ the Father.
The Father of Christ, we accept that as God. Allah, another name for God. In the Sankirtan, the movement of glorification of the holy names that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the figure to the far left, 500 years ago started, it considered incarnation of Krishna, who came in this age of Kali to inaugurate the glorification of the holy names. He made no distinction between the different religions as far as their divinity, ultimate divinity, God as Allah or Jehovah, but the supreme personality of Godhead. Even within the spiritual world, there is hierarchy. God has expanded himself. He has expanded himself as Lord Vishnu, Vishnu Tattva, and that is also Godhead. But the origin of all of those expansions, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, according to this idea or conception of the Vedas, it is Krishna that is the original form of God. The two-handed form, bluish-blackish, playing flute, eternally youthful, like 16, 17 years old, eternal, and full of all potencies of ecstasy, knowledge, beauty, charm, renunciation, wealth, fame, all opulences contained within him. He is the reservoir of all of those. That considered to be the original form of God. And the effulgence that Brahman, that some religious traditions allude to, that is nothing more than his bodily effulgence.
Can you give us an example of a demigod then?
Indra. We talked about him. Indra,
right.
One of the demigods in charge of the rains. And there may be demigods in charge of different aspects of the material world.
I meant in Western culture, though.
They may not have any.
The Greek and Roman god, Titan, Neptune is like Varuna, and the Castor and Pollux are like Ashwin Kumar. In fact, they're very similar in many respects. So those gods, they used to have the pagan.
This tradition, though, is so much older than Islam. It's not even fun. Even Judaism is older than Islam. And this is so much older even than Judaism. So this tradition, which has been, followed and revered by really countless sages through the ages. When Arjuna finally in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna reveals himself to him, at that time he says, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavam, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam, Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum. You Krishna, you are the Param Brahma, you are the Supreme Spirit, Param Dhamma, and the Supreme Abode, Pavitram Paramam, you are the Supreme Pure, and Purusham, you are a spiritual person, you're a Purusha, you're not impersonal. This is the amazing thing. Shashvatam means original. original. Dibya means transcendental, not of this world. Adideva means the original God. Ajam means unborn, and Vibhu means the greatest of the great. And then he says, not only you are seeing, I am seeing this from you, but then he says that all of the different rishis, all of the different sages, they have said the same thing. So this is the conception of the Vedic tradition is like that. And this is not like Indian religion, really, even though it emanates from India. You know, we don't consider this to be Indian reality. We're not in India now. And all of you are not Indian. You're coming from different traditions. And this tradition now, it is spread throughout South America, throughout Europe, Southeast Asia, Australia, United States, South America, Central America, Canada. People from all over the world, they understand this to be what it is, which is Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan means eternal. Dharma means, you know, the religion of the soul, which is that we are eternal servants of God. It's not a, you know, a restricted type mentality. And we say also that if you are a Christian, we don't want to take you away from Christianity. You will be a better Christian if you understand these things. If you sacrifice to God with ignorance and without any understanding, that sacrifice is not perfect. But if you sacrifice to God with understanding and with full heart, then your sacrifice is most high. In other words, if you know that you're not this body, you're spirit. I mean, if you're praying to God for wealth and paltry things like this, of this world, then, you know, there's one story of Dhruva, who was a little boy that was supposed to get a kingdom, but he was thwarted in getting the kingdom. And so he did tremendous austerities to try to get Lord Vishnu to give him the kingdom. And Lord Vishnu saw his austerities and was so pleased with his sacrifices that he came before him personally in his beautiful form. And he said, "Oh, Dhruva, I am so pleased by your austerity and your sacrifice. How can I please you? What can I do for you?" And he saw the beautiful form of the Lord and he said, "I am simply happy to see you. I was coming for some broken pieces of glass, but now I have the most beautiful and valuable gem." This idea like this. We don't know what it is that we really want or need, but really what the soul is hungering for is a loving relationship with God. And this is the process of bhakti yoga. The process of bhakti yoga is the process of purification, thinking, feeling, willing, in relationship with Krishna or with God, to help one to become purified from the material infection of false pride and false proprietorship.
But then the question may come to mind that, you know, Moses, Jesus, Muhammad, why didn't they tell their followers anything about how God, as a small child, lifted a hill and protected his friends from the village and things like that?
They may not have known. Krishna reveals himself to his devotees in response to their degree of surrender. Ye yatamam prapajante tangs tataiva bhajami aham. They may have surrendered to God in a certain way, and God revealing himself in a certain way, as a burning bush, perhaps, you see? As some tablets, you know, with the Ten Commandments. But full-fledged God, that is different.
Would you say that demigod worship is as such incomplete? There was talk about different demigods. Some people, a lot of people, worship Ganesh as a demigod. And the objective there is to overcome obstacles in their life. And they are doing it for that purpose. So, two questions. One is whether the process is incomplete. And second, whether the purpose for which they are doing, that is to overcome obstacles, is not a valid way to approach the Lord.
No need to overcome any obstacle. Krishna can take care of everything. At the end of the Bhagavad Gita, he declares to Arjuna, "Sarva dharman parityaja mame kam sharanam braja." You give up all your religiosity, all your other concocted ideas, all your other thought of what your occupational responsibility is, and mame kam sharanam braja, you simply surrender unto me. Ahang tvang, Krishna says, aham, I personally, tvang means you, mokshishami, sarva papib, I will deliver you from all thoughts of sinful reaction, I will deliver you from this world. Ma shucha means don't worry. Many people, you know, they take up spiritual life thinking that, you know, I have to do this and this and this and this and this first. You know, there's some preliminary. But this is not how you deal with God. That's how you deal with a business person. But there's no business like that. God is your dearmost friend. There's no one more intimate to you than God himself. And he doesn't want that you have any feeling. You know, in Christianity, in Judaism, they say God is a jealous God. Well, if you take it like this, that he doesn't want you to have any intermediary like that. No, you go right to him, you see? You go right to him, you see? Now, what you will desire, that may vary based on your piety, your qualification. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also says that Chatur Vidhi Bhajante Mam, Jana Sukritino Arjuna, Arto Artarti Jignyasur, Gyani Cha Bharatarshaba. And what this means is that there are four kinds of pious souls. Chatur, four types of Sukriti, Sukritina, people who are pious, maybe over many lifetimes. They have cultivated some piety and good fortune. They, Mam Prapadyante, surrender to me. But none of them come to God originally desirous of love. Arto means they are afflicted, they are suffering. Artarti means they want some wealth, some arta. Jignyasur means they may be curious. Someone comes to God out of curiosity, wants to learn a little bit more about reality. And Gyani means a seeker. None of those four classes of people, Krishna himself says, come to him originally desiring a loving relationship with him. But through association with bhaktas, with devotees, and through association with the process of glorification of the holy name and discussions, etc., etc., taking prasadam, foods that are offered to Krishna, rendering some service to Krishna, the heart becomes softened. And just like Dhruva, who wanted some wealth, understood that I have come for some broken pieces of glass, and now I have the most beautiful jewel before me. All will come to that plat of understanding that what I really want is to have a loving relationship with Krishna, with God. You may call him by other name, is okay, but that's what you really want. If you want to be associated with wealth, then you have to associate with Krishna, because he owns everything. He's the wealthiest. And no one is more famous than God. If you want fame, you associate yourself with God. He is the most beautiful. You associate yourself with him. If you want beauty, if you want charm, he is the most wise. All wisdom coming from him. Sarvasya chaham riddhi sannivishto matasmriti gyanam apoinam cha. He's giving you knowledge from within. If you want wisdom and knowledge, you go to him. You see? Whatever opulence you're desirous of, you go to him, you'll get it. You see? Ultimately, when one is mature in their spiritual aspirations, then they want only to serve him with love. And that's the maturation of bhakti. Significance of Govardhan Puja is that, first of all, as we mentioned, Krishna had completely charmed all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. He told them, don't bother giving some puja to Indra. You offer to Govardhan. And they're like putty in his hand, because they are charmed by his beauty, by his sweetness. And then Krishna also, by lifting Govardhan Hill, he is showing that, and everyone going to him for protection, even Nanda Maharaj going to him for protection, that he is the protector of all the devotees, you see. So he is the protector. He also telling you that you don't have to divide your worship with any other demigod or any other thing. You go directly to him and listen to him. And that really is the significance of Govardhan Pooj, in a nutshell. Krishna will protect me. And you have to think that. Krishna will protect me. You have to meditate like that. Krishna will protect me. Even at the time of death. The Christians, they say, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for thou art with me. That kind of mentality is good mentality. Not to fear anything. Not to fear anything. You see? Krishna will take care of you. Not to worry. Yes. I'm sorry I didn't hear that. And by this way, this gentleman is coming for the first time. He is my patient, Victor. Okay. Victor, he was, at one time, he was the city manager for Santa Clara. A very nice man. And I'm telling you that he has aesthetic, higher aesthetic mentality. He sends me pictures in email of beautiful, beautiful things. And he also likes philosophy and everything like that. He really is a seeker himself. Very good that you're coming. I honor you for coming. Yes.
Okay. So, just like Krishna said, I am the Supreme Personality of God. Okay. So, why the Krishna made the different department? Oh, this is the department of finance. This is the department of the Ganesha. This is the department of Indra. Why he made it? If you don't want to be prayer by the different people, by different achievement, okay? So you can be like a, just like a, instead of like Obama, you are the president and you have a, like a different minister. So he should be only the military ruler. So I am the only one. Why he doesn't give the all power to anyone?
Well, let's
why he gave the power to everyone?
Let me give you a rational explanation.
Yeah.
Okay? Rational explanation is this, is that really Krishna is for the lovers of God. Krishna ultimately is for the lovers of God. Those who are going and ascending up to the spiritual world. Those who have some desire still to exploit the material nature, they worship demigods. You never see that one is worshiping a demigod except that there is some material thing they want. You see? They always want something material. Oh, give me money. Give me this. Give me that. You know, they're worshiping like that. They have some material desire. You see? But Krishna, patram pushpam palam toyam, jome bhakti aparachi. You offer me with love, I will take it. This is loving exchange. If you're my friend, you're my dear friend, I offer you something. Krishna doesn't need anything. But he accepts it because he likes the exchange of love with his devotees. You see, why he did that, that's his prerogative. He's completely independent. But you can see this, is that the Vedic ideal is that one does not falsely think themselves to be independent. So if one still is harvesting material desires, they shouldn't become falsely independent and demoniac. You see? Demoniac nature is outside of Vedic culture. Demoniac nature is described in Bhagavad Gita. I am the controller. I own so much. I can do this. I can do that. I can do whatever I like. Demoniac nature. You see, that is not desirable in progressive spiritual life. So through the Vedic system, you know, even all this Vedic system was authored by Vyasadeva. After doing all of this, he still also was not satisfied. And so Narad came to him, Narad Muni. He said, of course you're not satisfied. You have not sufficiently glorified the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even after writing Vedanta Sutra, he still was not happy. And so then he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam, like this, through the discourse that he inspired in Shukadev Goswami.
I have one more question. Suppose, I know that spiritually cannot come right away to the Supreme God. Maybe go slowly, slowly, okay.
Come immediately.
Okay, and then
or can come slowly.
Okay.
That depends on the individual.
Okay, individual. I'm thinking this.
No, wait, first, understand this first of all.
Yeah.
Understand this first of all.
Okay.
You have a personal relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Okay.
If I say to you, eat this apple, and then you have someone else, I'm eating apple. Oh, he is eating apple, I don't have to eat. How eager you will be, how eager one will be to make relationship with God, that comes from inside. Ye yata mam prapadyante, tangs tataiva bhajamiham. Krishna will reciprocate with them. Now, don't think it's necessarily a slow process. No, even Christ, he said, love God the Father with all your heart and soul and mind. If you will become like that, a dedicated lover with all your heart and soul and mind, God will recognize you. He will reciprocate with you. You see, this is the great urgent need of the individual soul. So it doesn't have to take many lifetimes. It can be done in this lifetime, anytime. But again, we have to appreciate what is our position. We will try to make some excuse how we can keep a foot in this world, and maybe we can put little tiny foot in the spiritual world, like bargaining. We think, okay, I'll try to exploit this world, but then in the end, you know, I'll try to surrender to God. You know, even Christ saw that that was a sham. He said, those of you who will call upon me in the last moment, who haven't served me in their lifetime, I will say, I do not know you. You understand? That's a sham. God is not a fool. God is not to be duped. He knows your heart. Nobody knows your heart like he knows your heart. So how you will approach him, with what degree of sincerity, what degree of determination, that God is seeing. You know, I think it was a light bulb factory that they did some experiment in. They wanted to see how to increase the production in the light bulb factory. I think it was done in Connecticut decades and decades ago. And they tried different things, how to make the environment more productive. And they found that the number one way to make it more productive was if the supervisor were standing there watching them. Then they would do a better job. Well, guess what? The supervisor is there watching you all the time. He's inside witnessing everything. He knows you all the time. Sarvasya Chaham Muradi Sani Vishnu. He is situated within your heart. You are dealing with God all the time. Now, how you will perceive that, how you will develop that, will determine your relationship with Him. If you water your relationship down with Him, that is nobody's fault but your own. You understand? Everyone has to understand the urgent need and necessity for redeveloping and awakening your spiritual connection with Krishna, with God. You see, it's up to you and you and you and you and me like this, individually. No one standing in our way. So don't think it has to take place over many lifetimes. Yes?
One more question. Just like you are in an office and you have a small problem or you need something else, you are not going to directly to the CEO, just like the Supreme God, okay? You have to contact your manager, immediate manager, just like in the same way I have the demigod here. Why should I not go to the demigod? Why should I go for a small thing to go to the Supreme God, which can be solved by my demigods? Why am I going there directly to there?
This is what Krishna has to say. I just have to quote you shloka from Bhagavad Gita. I hope I'm in the right place. This is last verse. This is one shloka. Last verse of the seventh chapter. Those in full consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation and of the demigods and of all methods of sacrifice, can understand and know me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even at the time of death. Where's that verse, who are less intelligent, worship the demigods? Huh?
9:36.
No, I
think you're thinking of 7.
Here. It's right here. This.
What verse?
Antavat, it's 23rd verse, 7th chapter. Antavat tu palamtesham tad bhavati alpamedasham. Alpamedasham means small intelligence. Alpa, small. Devan deva yajo yanti madbhakta yanti mamapi. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, but my devotees ultimately reach my supreme planet.
Approaching a manager rather than going to the CEO? Right, okay. In relation to Krishna and the demigods, they handle different things completely. The demigods, people, as Prishta Krishna said before, people that approach demigods are usually wanting something, some material thing. They want some health, they want some wealth, they want some, you know, some benefit, material benefit. But that's not what we go to Krishna for. And Prabhupada's taught us, and Bhagavad Gita tells us, if you go to Krishna, but not for those things, just for love, all those other things will just automatically get taken care of. So you don't have to worry about the wealth and the health and all these things if you surrender to Krishna. He'll take care of it for you.
No, but let me answer your question another way. Prabhu, so you said, why not go to some minister in order to get to the president eventually, let's say, or the CEO? Okay, well, Krishna actually, he has a similar idea. He says, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. You approach my devotee. And you get knowledge from him, and you also engage in service to me through him. So this ideal of going to a representative of God is there as well. But he doesn't say to go to a demigod, he says to go to my devotee. Because devotee is like transparent medium to God. When you will see the devotee or hear from the devotee, you will not be mistaken to think that they are giving me something other than what Krishna has said. you see. When I first met Prabhupada in 1971, after being in East Pakistan, and I said to Srila Prabhupada, I'm telling you, I said to Srila Prabhupada, you know, Srila Prabhupada, you're the only person in this world. This is Prabhupada, one-on-one, in a room ourself. I mean, I may let you down. Trishna, he will never let you down. With that, I understood what it means to be charged via medium. That Krishna is saying, you give up all your will, surrender unto me only. Mam ekam sharanam braja. And Guru, same thing. Not to me, you surrender to Krishna. You see? Krishna will not let you down. This is what is meant by being transparent. The devotee of God, bona fide devotee, is not an idol to you seeing Krishna. You to see Krishna. You understand? This is that kind of intermediary.
Okay. More thing. If you can reach to Godhead, you can go through the devotees and then God.
Yes.
So why the God made the between the demigod? We don't need it. So why the God made the demigod? If you cannot reach to the Godhead, so why they made God made the demigod?
Demigod is for people with material consciousness.
And then one thing, if the Gita says, when you're dying, then I'm thinking this way. Because the whole life, what I need something, I'm doing prayer to this God.
Yes,
okay,
yes,
that's
yes,
fine.
Yes.
And then in the end, the Gita says, when you die and that time you remember me, you will reach me. I'm thinking this way, when I die, I will remember the God, the Supreme God, right? Then I will reach my goal. So why should I bother the whole life?
That's what I said about Christ. I said that if you are spending your whole life, you know, seeking to exploit this material world for your own pleasure, for your own purpose, then at the time of death, if you will call upon God to save you, why do you think that he will all of a sudden save you?
He said
in the Gita, Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishasi satyamte pratijani priyosi me. Twice he says this. He says, you think of me and become my devotee. Bhava madbhakto madhyaji, you worship me, serve me, mam namaskuru, and offer obeisance to me. Then he says, mame vaishasi satyamte, I promise you, you will come back to me. This he says. So this idea of thinking that one can at the end of life, how do you know when the end of life will come? And you might be thinking of, you know, we were in a head-on collision in Mauritius, you know, Prabhupada, myself, and Brahmananda. So Prabhupada was in the back seat, I was in the front seat, and I was chanting in my mind, I was chanting Bhaja Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda. And Brahmananda said I was just in Maya. Who knows what you're going to be thinking at the time of death? Like you have some control over that. No, what you want to do is develop your love. Listen, what you will love, you will think of. If you love money, you will think of money. You see? If you're thinking of women, then you will become a woman in your next life. And if you're thinking of man, you may become a man in your next life. If you are thinking of a deer like Jad Bharat, you may become a deer in your next life. If you're, whatever you cultivate, whatever mentality you cultivate, this kind of cultivation, you know, these gunas, these qualities that you associate with in life, they will determine your next birth. When you leave this body, if you still harbor material consciousness, not only you leave the gross body, but you take with you the subtle body. The subtle body, the mind, intellect, false ego, goes with you. That covering is still there. And by the arrangement of Krishna, Yamaraj's agent, as agent for Krishna, he will send you to the womb or to the seed, whatever you are qualified for your next life. But if you are spiritualized in Krishna consciousness or God consciousness, at the time of death, you immediately transfer to the spiritual world. And that transition, very easy.
So, today is Govardhan Puja.
Today is Govardhan Puja.
Today is Govardhan
Celebration.
Celebration of
of this day, and the inhabitants of Vrindavan were very frightened by all of the rainstorms, and they were disturbed by that. And so Lord Krishna suggested that, you know, they get under the hill, and he would protect them. And so I've been thinking this week about some verses in the Bhagavad Gita about how the surrendered souls are transcendental to the effects of the modes of material nature and things such as hot and cold and, loss and gain and happiness and distress. And Krishna states that the advanced soul is equipoised and established in the self and thinks of the Lord in those times. Now, do they get to that position through knowledge? Do they get to that position through penance, purification? How do they get to that point to where they are only depending and thinking about Lord Krishna?
Well, Krishna says that the path of knowledge and the path of action, they lead to the same place. Gyan and karma, yoga. They lead to the same place. So if you're saying, you know, does proper action lead you to that place, or does proper knowledge lead you to that place? Actually, Krishna says, which is better? It is action. In other words, even though we are not this body, we're spirit. We have no connection, really, with this material world. This material world is Krishna's energy. So what you have in your hand, your body, your mind, your senses, that you dedicate. You see, it becomes spiritualized. For Krishna, there is no distinction between matter and spirit. It is all his energy. You see? So if you take that, you know, what you have to offer to Krishna, you offer to him. That's the path of action. If you think, I will simply meditate upon it, that is called jnana. But then vijnana, which is realized knowledge, that requires action. In other words, if I understand that God is the proprietor of everything, that's knowledge. But if I understand how I can offer something to him with love, that's realized knowledge, you see? It's like someone who finds some money on the street. They say, well, it's money. And they know, hey, this is not my money. If they say, well, it's mine, well, then they're thieves. If they say, well, it's not my money, and they want to find out, well, whose money is it? And that's, you know, proper understanding. In the same way, we understand that we're not part of this world, that this world is God's energy, it's God's property. That's the truth. You're free, really. If you could remain in that understanding, you're a free person. The truth shall set you free. Except for the fact that the jiva soul is active. And unless we find the higher activity, which is bhakti yoga, devotional service, we cannot remain in that understanding. Because the jiva soul is tatashta shakti. Tatashta means is in the middle, like on the shore of the bank of a river or the ocean. That's tatashta, between the land and the water. It's right on the margin. So the marginal potency is tatashta shakti. So the jiva soul has to commit to one or the other in order to become dedicated or exploitative. If they become exploitative, that's material consciousness. If they become dedicating, that's spiritual consciousness. So the path of knowledge must culminate in action. The path of wisdom, meditation, all of that must culminate in devotional service. And therefore, Krishna says, if you really want to know me in truth and fact, you see, Bhaktyamam abhijananti yavanyashtashmi tatvata. If you really want to know God in truth and fact, as he really is, he will reveal himself to you. Bhaktyamam abhijananti. Through bhakti, you can know him. Yavanyashtashmi tatvata. That word again, tatvata, means really, really understand him and know him. Only through bhakti. So Krishna will reveal a certain aspect to a jiva soul. For example, he may reveal only Brahman. He may only reveal his divine effulgence to someone. Oh, I have seen God. Yeah, you have seen God, but only his aspect of impersonal divinity in the form of that bodily effulgence. And you may think, though, that's everything. You haven't seen his ecstatic aspect, though. Is it? And then Paramatma, that is Sat Chit, eternality and knowledge. And the Ananda form of God, that is Krishna. You see, and Rupa Goswami describes that in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that the qualities that Krishna possesses are so far beyond all qualities, including those of Lord Vishnu, that he possesses certain qualities that no other personality possesses, even Lord Vishnu, even Narayan, and that is the quality of ecstatic love. Yes?
Why pray cows?
A very good question. We pray cows, not so much pray cows. We think of cow as mother. In the Indian Vedic conception, there are many, many mothers. You get your body from the earth. The earth is your mother. You get your body from your mother. Your mother is your mother. The cow gives you milk. Is mother. So many mothers you have, 8 mothers. I cannot list them all even. But queen is mother. Nurse is mother. Wife of Gurudev may be mother, like this. So the point is this, is that from that aspect, we don't want to eat mother. Okay? In the Leela of Krishna, we get a certain understanding about cows also. Now, Krishna is called Gopala. Go means cow and Pala means protector. We see that in his Leela. In the spiritual world, we have information that there is also Surabhi cows. They are divine spiritual forms. They have a relationship with Krishna in Shantaras, neutrality. But these cows, they're wish-fulfilling cows. They can fulfill your desire for service, as there are trees in the spiritual world that are all spiritual, called kalpavriksha. Those trees, you can get anything you want from them for service. You see? This nature of service in that environment. So in that way, from the material standpoint, cow is like mother. And from the spiritual standpoint, Krishna is Gopala. You see? Like that.
10 minutes. You've got 10 minutes.
We don't need 10 minutes.
No, they need 10 minutes.
Oh, they need 10 minutes. Oh, okay. So the point is, for that reason, the cow is revered. Now in India, you know, you'll see cows running around the street. That's not cow protection. That's not cow protection. That's not really what is known as a goshala or anything like that. Really, it's cow neglect.
Prabhuji, could you elaborate a bit on is there any difference between expansion and incarnation, or are they the same?
What was the first word?
Expansion and incarnation. Are they the same or is there any difference?
Advaita achuta anadim anantarupam. Advaita means God is non-dual. He's one. Okay? Advaita achuta means he never falls down. Even if he enters within the material world, he's completely independent of control. He's the controller, you see? So we're talking about expansions of Godhead. Because the jiva soul is also an expansion of Krishna. But that jiva soul is not independent. Neither when the jiva soul comes to the material world is the jiva soul completely free from its influence of the material energy, which is very powerful. Maya adhyakshena prakriti. So the expansions of Godhead, advaita achuta anadim. Anadi means that he is original, without any origin. Advaita achuta anadim anantarupam, but yet he has expanded himself into unlimited forms. We have some example. For example, if you have a candle and you take that candle and light another candle, you still have the original candle. Some kind of material example like that. And yet another candle and another candle. God has expanded everything. Nothing is existing but Vasudev. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Nothing is existing outside of him. But how he is existing,
So I'll give you an example. So Srila Prabhupada sitting there in India, and one gentleman came up to him and said, Swamiji, is it not like, you know, the rivers and streams, they run into the ocean, and then the waters, they mix together and become non-differentiated. You understand? He said, do you understand that in the ocean there are sharks and whales and minnows and so many different types of fish? You understand? In that way, existing within reality, there is variegatedness. You see, in this room, how many people? Maybe 100 people, I don't know. Each individual, you see? We're not merging together. If I eat something, you're not eating it. If you eat something, I'm not eating it. We're so many individuals. There's variegatedness. And none of us looks the same. We all look a little bit different. You understand? So there is variety within reality. This is the nature of God. In the spiritual world also, there's variety. The lower aspect of God is the undifferentiated Brahman. You see? That is just his bodily effulgence. But the higher aspect of God, there's variety. God has expanded himself first as Shankarshan. This described in the Puranas and also described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. That Shankarshan is none different from Nityananda, from Baladev. That Shankarshan is also Vishnu Tattva. He is an expansion of God directly. And that Shankarshan has expanded all of the material and spiritual worlds. What kind of service mentality that Godhead has? That Nityananda Prabhu has expanded everything, the material world, the spiritual worlds, the Vaikuntha worlds, everything expansion of him, and he is an expansion of Krishna. You see? So when we say that Nityananda Prabhu is important, we have to understand he is non-different from Shankarshan. He has made everything possible for us. He has made service to God possible for us. He has made the spiritual world possible. And yet he is simply an expansion, first expansion, of Krishna. You see? So he is expansion. None of them have all of the qualities of Krishna. Some lesser quality they may have. But they possess independence, and in the Panchatattva of Mahaprabhu, you see that there is Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, there's Nityananda Prabhu who is Shankarshan, Sri Advaita who is Mahavishnu, Gadadhar who is Srimati Radharani, Sri Vas who is the individual soul characterized by Narad Muni, Sri Vas Adi Gaura, but all of them serving Mahaprabhu. Even the Vishnu Tattva, they want to serve Krishna. And in fact, they are serving him by receiving service from those souls who are qualified to give that service to them at that level.
So, can these words be used interchangeably, like expansion and incarnation?
Yeah, but incarnation can be a little bit tricky.
That's what
You think incarnation means they've taken a material body.
No, like even when Krishna descends to this world, it's not that he has a material body, but is that the same as Krishna expanding or Krishna incarnating? What's the difference there?
He can personally come himself because he has come with Vrindavan. Krishna never leaving Vrindavan. Achinta Beda Beda Tattva. Simultaneously one and different. But expansion, Sri Jamyaham, he says, I descend myself, aham. You see, so he's saying like that he is descending himself.
The incarnations are complete.
Some of them are partial. Some of them have a specific lila. Mm. There are lila avatars. They may have a certain function to form. Just like Korma has a certain function to form. Hayagriva has a certain function to form. Rishabhdev has a certain function. Some of them are empowered individual souls. They may be jiva souls who are empowered to do a certain thing. And some of them may be Vishnu Tattva. But the different incarnations and expansions, they have a certain lila, a certain function to perform. And then Krishna himself, he's saying why? To reestablish the principles of real dharma.
Sanatan Dharma, to save his devotees, to vanquish miscreants. That's his lila. He did that during his lila.
Okay. So, when we say the soul is a spark, does that spark have a shape? Like
yes. Internal? In the spiritual world, those in Vaikuntha, they have four arms. They're all effulgent beings. They may have different color. They may be reddish or bluish or white or yellow or red or green. Their form. Four arms. Beautiful blackish transcendental hair, reddish smile and reddish lotus eyes, transcendental garb, golden garb, like Vishnu. In the Vaikuntha world, like that. And in Goloka Vrindavan, they take on different forms for service. Cowherd boy, gopi, cow, kalpa vriksha, like that. They have form. You have form also. And that form will be will reflect your service. But really form. Krishna really has form. But it's not material. So is that okay? Prabhu Rakshit wants to give the results of the monthly Sankirtan festival. Oh, Rakshit Prabhu, he's taking so much responsibility. He's a working man. He's taking so much responsibility for this ashram. We have to give so much honor and respect to him for his service, really. So you understand?
Krishna Krishna Prabhu ki. Jai.